it was in 2017.
Okay.
Okay. And that was when we did the 2017 through 2020 3-year strategic plan. Then it was no longer an ad hoc committee, and it, last year when we began to look at the bylaws, we said, you know, they're really, we need to stop looking at the strategic plan every 3 years. We need to look at it not only when we create it, but we need to keep at it and look if when it should be modified and when we need new information. And so a new committee was created. If this committee met before, I don't know if it did. The standing committee, I don't think it has.
It used to be the whole board was the standing, was the committee.
The last meeting was in February.
And the last meeting of this committee was in February?
Yes, that was the first initial one.
And I wasn't there, so I don't know what happened. And do you happen to have minutes from it?
You know what? I don't know why we didn't include that, but I can certainly print those out.
Well, no, I'm just curious.
It was during Jennifer Wortham's term, and let me just look it up right here for you.
Yeah, that would be good.
It was February. And I don't think a lot was... this one, they discussed a lot about the branding and the logo options. So that moved forth to the board. And actually, that was...
Is that real? All he did?
That was the only agenda item.
Okay.
Was the branding and logo.
Jennifer was bringing in comments about, like, the Blue Zone. This was when she was first starting to get us to think about maybe going out to the Blue Zone and taking a tour and things of that nature. This was also the first meeting that she had brought up Lift to Rise. I don't think she had met with them just yet. But then right after this, Heather came to a board meeting. Okay. Everything else that happened after this meeting.
Okay. So the reality is we can make of it what we want. But I think that, and I hope the CEO will agree with me, that it needs to exist not only for the every 3-year thing, but to make sure the strategic plan is updated and any additional information that relates to the strategic plan is brought here and into the board as appropriate.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, move we approve the agenda. Is there a second? I'll move it. Any second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. Public comment. Since there's no public here, there's no public comment. New business, the community needs assessment, RFP, and I'll turn it over to Conrado.
All right. So we have prepared a presentation that will walk us through where we are with the strategic plan that was approved 3 years ago and how that plan has helped guide the work of the district and its investments, and where we are today, and what we see the future of this plan to be. So, Megan, we'll start with the presentation.
By the way, if I could just add one thing, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that before we did the strategic planning, people would come to the district asking for grants all over the place. And although the board might say, well, that's not what we do, there was nothing written down about, well, what is our focus going to be? So one of the things the 2017 strategic plan is, and I don't know if you're way over it, is that we narrowed it down to some areas that we were going to focus our grants.
Yeah, Donna will talk on that and give the details about what we're funding and not. I'm going to kind of start off with just talking about what you guys, what I presented back in, I believe, the June board meeting about the listening forums and kind of how that work and that conversation led us to the discussion of the RFP and how we need to maybe create some updates and have that discussion with you guys. As you're very well aware, in November was a voted expansion that more than, doubled the coverage of the district. And these new boundaries literally led to not only like a new geographic landscape, but also new demographic and cultural landscape. And these new boundaries kind of led to different health priorities that we may not have been represented in the old district boundaries. And how we tried to start to learn about these is we began with the community listening forums. And just a high level, because you guys have heard this before, we did conduct forums from February to April of 2019. We conducted 6 through the Eastern Coachella Valley in the new area, 1 in Mecca, North Shore, India, La Quinta, Palm Desert in the Sun City area, and then Coachella. And these forums really were an informational session to start off with the history, because a lot of people weren't aware of the district. The expansion they voted on are two new board members.
Where's North Shore?
All the way down by the Salton Sea.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's basically the southern limit of the district, which is the southern limit of the county.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, and then we talked about the 2017 and 2020 strategic plan. Our three community health focus areas was the main focus of these forums, and it was an interactive, resident-driven conversation about the homelessness, primary care, and behavioral health, and then healthy eating, active living, with an opportunity to just discuss other areas that may not have been underneath those. And like I mentioned, it was really just to start to understand the needs and priorities.
How many people on average came to these sessions?
I'll tell you right now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So with these forums, reached about 75 people total across the six forums. The goal wasn't to create these really large meetings. There was a focus to keep them more smaller for like the meaningful dialogue. And the biggest takeaways, there is a summary that you guys have seen before in the June, but I also included it in this packet for your review. But the biggest takeaways was really the high need for services and education, specifically in behavioral health and primary care, and then a strong need for resource awareness across the board, from healthy eating, homelessness, community services, kind of everything. And within these conversations, there was a lot of priorities that were brought to the forefront that fell within the resources, capacity, and influence of the district, but some that were not really in our influence or we had little or limited influence over. For example, some areas on the left that we had more influence that we brought up a lot across the forums were the increased need for health professionals in the Valley, the frequency and geographic range of mobile clinics, trying to expand that, mental health and substance use education programs, more availability of that and access, expanding access to preventative screenings, both mental and physical health, so both components, service awareness, a tracking system for referrals. A lot of the smaller nonprofits that were a part of these forums, just the kind of like a lot of lost movement and just a way to communicate better was talked about. Building capacity of these nonprofits, increasing community health fairs, expos, kind of bringing all these things to one place so it's easily more accessible. Nutrition classes across the board, schools, communities, even food banks where we have a lot of people frequently. And then there was a lot of talk about increased residential engagement during like large input or decision-making processes that happen, and expanding, trying to reach more people to like bring them to the forums and things like that. Some of the things that were outside of our influence, we still have, you know, different ways that we can tailor into these, but not directly, was a high need for grocery stores, specifically out in the Mecca and North Shore area. Improved rental lease agreements. There's a lot of people that were very stressed about certain terms. And accessibility of fire equipment when there's a lot of fires, especially in the mobile home park areas. Street maintenance and paving, community policing, especially around the parks, so people feel a little bit more safe. Improve access to clean water. There was a lot of talk about the marijuana dispensaries, which we aren't a huge part of, but they seemed to, a lot of the residents, especially in like the Coachella area, felt like they weren't involved in the planning process that was talked about. There's a need for more community leaders so that neighborhoods can be better represented. And then frequency of sunlight bus routes, scheduling availability of these health professionals, because it's so limited, people find that there's no walk-ins or scheduling is very far out. And then financial literacy programs so people can kind of start to learn how to maybe take care of their finances a little bit better. And then there was talked about a lot in Mecca and North Shore was the stray dogs. So those are just kind of some examples of things that were brought up. So although these forums provided some meaningful dialogue, you know, it was only 75 people, and it did provide a lot of challenges and kind of things I brought to the forefront about some work that we needed to continue. So we did enter these communities, and a lot of them weren't even aware of the district or our scope and capacity, so that kind of led to a lot of conversation being driven around that in the beginning. And we went into these forums with our already established focus areas. So we kind of pushed to understand residents' priorities within something that was already established, that that was before the expansion had happened, so it was the geographically, demographic, different landscape. So they weren't we kind of came in with the priorities instead of leaving it completely open-ended. And so those results kind of were what we wanted to hear and not what necessarily they wanted to share. Although we did open it up at the end for things that weren't within those, it kind of, the conversation was already pushed towards a specific way. Like I said, the strategic plan, it wasn't necessarily representative of all participants. One thing that came up a lot was homelessness wasn't really resonating among the Latino communities that were speaking it. More so the literal homelessness, there's a lot of talk about the overcrowding and how several families were bunking up with each other, so that's more the precarity house, but that conversation was a lot smaller than we were anticipating. It wasn't necessarily what people thought were a priority in those areas. That's why primary care was a lot of the conversation as opposed to homelessness or healthy eating. And that kind of led to us thinking that this might be an indicator that we need to rethink our focus areas or at least come up with an idea to reassess and get some data and understand what's really representative of the entire valley. And like I said, these forums were limited in reach and we can't use what we learned to generalize to the entire East Valley. So kind of what we learned was that, like I had mentioned at the very beginning. That this was just a start, like it was meaningful and it did lead to this next step that we are thinking and Conrado's going to touch on, is this need for this comprehensive approach to get more data on the entire Coachella Valley to more inform our next steps in our work. And we need this like rigorous, resident-driven approach to uplift the health needs of the entire Coachella Valley, get a set of data, and use this for our steps going forward to inform our strategic plan and kind of develop something that is more representative of all residents that now are encompassed in our boundaries. So I'm going to hand it over to Donna, and she's going to kind of touch where we are and what our grants spending has been and different things that we've allocated.
Can I make a couple comments first?
Sure.
Two things sort of jumped out at me. One is that, one is that when you say that people in the East Valley don't know who we are and what we do, the reality is people in the West Valley don't know who we are and what we do also. And so I just wanted to add that. Secondly is I wanted to share something that Congressman Ruiz said to me rather strongly about a year ago when I was out campaigning for Measure BB, the expansion of the district. Because one of the things that I talked about was the healthcare disparities between East and West. And remember, I was mostly speaking in the East because that's who was voting. And he said, be very careful about highlighting the disparities between the East and the West for two reasons. One is that the people in the East don't want to somehow feel like they're the poor cousins and they're wanting handouts, et cetera, et cetera. And then secondly, it feeds into the people in the West thinking somehow their funds are going to be, you know, preferentially spent in the East. So I hope as we move forward and talk about strategic planning and assessments and all that, although we obviously there is disparity between the East and the West, that we kind of focus on what are the needs of the Coachella Valley. We spent a lot of time talking about one Coachella Valley, and the reality is if there are people not getting good health care anywhere in the Coachella Valley, it hurts the health of the entire valley. But I'm very much attuned, especially after Congressman Ruiz was very blunt in telling me to stop doing that, that we need to be aware of that.
Yeah, I have to second that. If we were to go and have the same conversations in Desert Hot Springs, we would hear a lot of the same health disparities, right? If we were to go into Thousand Palms, same thing, Cathedral City, we would hear a lot of the same health disparities. They may have a different name, they may have a different face, but they exist. I attended two of these forums. I thought they were very exciting, right? It was like a bunch of new people I had never seen before. We had some of our nonprofit friends there. I took a bunch of notes and I participated myself in some of these. So the information that's given back is like very accurate to what people were saying. But I, again, only attended two and there was six. I'm sure I missed gaps too, but thank you.
Do I need to stand up?
Do you want me to stand up or?
You, should we just
whatever
follow,
you're comfortable. Follow along.
You can lie down if you want to.
You might have to just make sure you point it when you move.
Oh, okay. Which one do I use?
The arrows on the top right.
To the right.
Oh, okay, okay. So, to sum up, and particularly for Karen and Arthur, because you weren't at our 2017 beginning of our strategic plan when we did have the facilitator that came in. And it kind of was not very well community driven. We had people there that responded, they you know, open comment. Most of them were nonprofits. They wanted to, they were very anxious to see which way their funding was going to go and if they were going to be cut out. But it was more facilitator directly to the board driven, saying, well, what do you individually ask each board member? Well, what do you think is the biggest priority health needs in the Coachella Valley or in the district? And it was sort of unanimously picked, well, let's decide homelessness and primary care access and behavioral health care access and then healthy eating, active living. And then that fourth one, which is like we call it QSAT, which is quality, transparency, quality, safety, accountability, and transparency. That was sort of more like a euphemism to make sure we're watching out the hospital. They're making sure they're being safe, transparent, accountable, and what's the last one? Transparent. So that's where we are now with our strategic plan. These forms that we gave you, we ran a query with GIFs. Well, the grants that we've given you, look on top, there's three of them. And this is all the funding that we've done in these particular focus areas, beginning basically in 2017 when the strategic plan began. And that is broke, so these individuals are broken down in this next slide right there. As you can see, over the last going on 3 years, we've given over $3.6 million to homelessness. And now bear in mind, $3 million of that is part of the district putting money into the collective fund, into the foundation.
And some of it is sitting in the foundation.
Yes.
And hasn't been spent yet.
Right. The primary care and behavioral health care access of $4.5 million, that's including $2 million, again, that the Desert Healthcare District put into the foundation as a behavioral health initiative collective fund, which we more than likely will begin to start utilizing that once we get the community, the mental health needs assessment in front of the board tomorrow night, and then in front of Supervisor Perez's Green Ribbon Committee on the 3rd. And then Healthy Eating, Active Living, you can see that that's over $1 million. So for a total of almost $10 million has been committed towards those three focus areas over the last, going on 3 years.
But that is, the numbers working backwards, each grant proposal was considered in isolation, not within a predetermined amount for that sector.
Right.
So therefore, this just is the sum of the decisions that were made independently.
Right. When we did budget, we did not allocate a confirmed amount to the budget line item.
And I want to thank you very, very much for having this printed on my birthday, September 19th. So thank you.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
A big one.
How old are you now?
No, yes. He said a big one.
Very big one.
65.
Very big
75.
One.
75.
Wow.
75. The 10th anniversary of my 65th birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So by the end of June 2020, more than likely, you know, you take that $9 million mark, more like we're going to be over the $10 million in grants when we're complete with the strategic plan fiscal year ending. And then the leveraging is $1,886,800, and that includes matching dollars for the CV Housing First, as well as Palm Springs. We matched with the city of Palm Springs, so we actually put that much money in, and it was matched and leveraged other cities, and the city of Palm Springs included put those dollars in as well. So we were able to leverage quite a bit of dollars throughout the community. And now, next steps.
All right. Thank you.
Do you guys have any questions about this? No?
Thank you.
Yes,
you did.
The grant leveraging, is that for, like, I know we asked HARC we gave them $300,000 and they had to come up with like a certain percentage more on top of that. Does that include for their triennial assessment?
No. That's an internal grant requirement that we have.
But that wouldn't be like part of our leveraging dollars.
No. Because we gave them a grant, but we asked them that we're not going to support the whole amount that they're asking.
So whatever they bring in, we don't count in these leverage.
No.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next steps. Looking at where we are with the existing strategic plan, we understand that there are two things that are happening. Number one, the existing plan will expire in a few months from now. And number two, the district for which the plan was created doesn't exist anymore. So that renders the existing strategic plan almost obsolete. We need to create a new plan. And to create a new plan takes two steps. One step is looking outside of our walls and understanding what is the situation in the district, and the second step will be, what do we do about it?
Before you go, can you go back? What's IE?
Like in Brunswick, for example.
No, IE resident.
Inland Empire.
Is that Inland Empire?
No, I meant like an example. Like
oh, an example.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
For example.
Yeah.
So IE is in other words. EG is for example. So.
Yeah.
So.
IE also.
IE. Okay. Got it. So it's not Inland Empire. That's what I want. Okay.
That's what I first thought.
Got it. Okay.
And how do we learn what's outside? I think will be an important message to our communities that we really want to learn what the community believes are their priorities, because that will create a framework of action for the district. And in the process, our residents will know more about who we are as an entity, what we do, and what we can do for them.
How do you differentiate what people think are their needs versus what truly are their needs?
So there are different steps, and we will explain in a graph how this will work.
Okay.
But essentially, there is data and then there are perceptions. So we need to reconcile those two components. And we need to do that through a community engagement.
Okay.
So effectively, one of the sub-goals of this process is a marketing strategy. The mere fact that people going out into the community representing our agenda is, again, goes to the question of educating the community that we exist.
Exactly. That will be one of the benefits of doing this. We also learn through the exercise of listening to our community that something that we have known for many years, that health doesn't happen in isolation, and that in fact health is a result of a number of conditions such as where we live, how we live, what our education level is, what our economy opportunities are, influences health outcomes. And we have had some siloed efforts to address social determinants of health, which is the keyword that we want to use through this request for proposals or through this work of a community health needs assessment. It's understanding how those other things influence health outcomes in the Coachella Valley, and also understand who is doing what in the Coachella Valley that will influence social determinants of health. I believe there is a lot of conversation that needs to take place between now and the point in which we're ready to have a strategic plan. But also, it is a conversation that will continue over time. When we look at the social determinants of health, and even through this listening session, we have been able to identify, or the community has identified, that, okay, health is important, but we are not healthy enough if we don't have a built environment that facilitates health, right? If we don't have access to transportation that will take us to a healthcare facility, if our conditions in our roads and our safety is not adequate for good health outcomes. So we believe that it will be very important for the district to have a lens of social determinants of health to identify how we fit in that larger vision. And if I can predict something that we might be able to do in the future as we identify the social determinants of health and how they influence the health of our community to create a vibrant Coachella Valley in the future, it will be trying to become a catalytic force in the valley to bring together other entities that are doing different work on the social determinants of health. And I will use one example. Lift to Rise is one of those organizations that is looking at economic opportunities, lifting people out of poverty by giving them good housing. Those types of efforts are happening right now in a siloed way, and I think it is important to bring those entities together. I'm not sure that we as a district are the right entity to bring people together, but we can contribute with our funds to an entity that would become a sort of a funding collaborative to support the connection of those different efforts in the valley. That will create a health framework that understands the sustainable development of the Coachella Valley rather than just looking at healthcare. Now in that same token, the community will identify for us what would be the right investment for us in the healthcare space. And I'm sure that same things that came up through this process of access to healthcare, access to healthcare is a more complex framework than just having a place and having the people. There has to be an understanding of what is the availability of services that exist, how people access those services, how people understand and accept those services, and how people afford those services. So those are some of the conditions through which people access healthcare. So for the process of engaging the community in a community health needs assessment, we're looking at the approach of the Association for Community Health Improvement, which has 9 steps. And when you when you look at step 4, that's where we collect the data. And step 5, there is a reconciliation process of what are the health indicators, what is the data telling us, and what the community's understanding of that is. So from the very beginning, we will be engaging the community in this process to tell us what their priorities are, but that has to have a process of reconciliation between what data tells us and what the community believes. So, in the end, what we're going to have is step number 6, to document and communicate the results. And step number 7 will help us identify what are the strategies moving forward. And that's where I believe we will engage the board in designing the strategic plan. And when we think of a strategic plan, we need to look, as I said, the first condition is understanding what our opportunities are, what's outside, what is a problem, identify, define the problem, and identify the potential solutions. And then through the process of strategic planning, which is internal, we would have to understand, okay, what are our resources, what is our capability to address these things so that we can plan for the future without going crazy, because the needs will be huge, but our sphere of influence will be limited.
What's the timeline to get to number 7?
I believe the timeline to get to number 7 depends on the timeline to get to number 1. If we approve this plan to be, or this request for proposals to be released by, we are in September, October, then we know that we will have organizations that will submit their proposals, we will have an evaluation process.
What is the point?
By January, we will have a contract in place, and they will have...
What's the end timeline?
When
do you need...
So I assume January, when will we get to 7?
Summer.
Summer, okay.
And ideally, we actually need to get there sooner because we do our July budget in May.
Yes.
So hopefully the board will have decided on its priorities by May so that the budgeting can be done for the next year.
So what's our practical goal? What's our target?
Our target, I would say, is April, May.
April, May.
Yeah.
Is that realistic?
I don't think that's realistic with this, but what I think is realistic, we have had a lot of very wealthy people, very wealthy organizations drop money, at least in the Eastern Coachella Valley, to do a lot of this work already. So the California Institute for Rural Studies was literally going into people's homes and swabbing their countertops for pesticides, dust, also like what are the real health data mining, essentially, health impacts. So we have people like the Institute for Rural Studies. They've done a report called the Invisible Coachella Valley. We have people who have done pesticides in the Eastern Coachella Valley. We've done the Building Healthy Community Initiative with the Cal Endowment, who dropped $10 million, which has been one of the biggest health investments, you can say, in the Eastern Coachella Valley. They did a big ass report on improving housing conditions in the Eastern Coachella Valley. I don't think this is it, but I think we have other people who have already done this work.
But we certainly don't want to duplicate what's already been done, but we also need to know what's out there first.
Correct. So we have hard...
Which I think is what number 2 is. Isn't that number 2?
Yes. This is number 2. I think number 1 is the board, though. I think the board needs to sit and reflect on strategies that we would ask our staff to dive into deeper, that we would ask whoever comes in and does this RFP work for us or this assessment work for us, like deeper, right? So housing is an issue everywhere. It might not be under the realm of homelessness, but housing stock, housing shortage, people have told us in very different kinds of ways, this is what's important for us. All right. Dear person who comes in and does this assessment, we would like you to focus on housing, period. I don't think by May, I don't think we can get this piece of work done, but I think by May we can collect data from various other sources. We also just gave $300,000 to HARC to do a community health assessment that they're undergoing right now. So I think their report is due by the end of the first quarter of next year. So some of this data is already going to be available to us.
My concern is that, first of all, I don't know what's out there. Mm-hmm. So somebody has to look and see what's out there. Somebody needs to see if what's out there is actually asking the questions we want to ask, and is it collecting data that's not just opinion, but actually objective data. That's why I sort of think number two is when you sort of do the survey and find out what's out there. I mean, there's also the attitude that, well, we know what the issues are, but we know housing is an issue, but do we as a district really want to get involved in housing?
Right.
And how do we, I mean, that's up to the board, but the board needs to know what it's choosing from, the priorities. So, I mean, how would you guys answer?
One of the steps that we have if you read the request for proposals and the deliverables, which is exactly what the organization that will do this work will be asked to do, one of them is an overview or reference to relatable health assessment and reports previously conducted in the Coachella Valley. So what is exactly out there? What are the reports? What's the research? What is the existing information that we have available that can inform the process through which our district will define and decide what to do for the future?
But your request for proposal covers all the steps up until 6 or 7.
Yes.
And maybe because we don't know what the first part is going to give us, maybe we need to split it in two and say, okay, we really need to start right now looking at what's out there, what's been collected, and what's not been collected, and start engaging the stakeholders, which I believe, by the way, I think that's very important, because as soon as people start hearing we're going to do this, they're going to freak out and say they're stepping on our toes.
We've already done it.
Yeah, so I think maybe, again, I'm thinking out loud, we need to sort of separate steps 1, 2, and 3, and we need some help with that. And then after we've completed that, then we need to have a separate group or another RFP that says, okay, we know what's out there, here's what's not out there, we need to collect some more data.
Would that extend the timeline for us to decide? And so that's one consideration.
Yeah.
So how long would that extend?
Well, you could put one RFP out with two components to it so that you fund one, and when one is affected, then part two just kicks into gear.
But
so
this one is comprehensive in the sense that it's already going to do steps 1, 2, and 3 before we go into defining.
But how can you bid on parts 4, 5, 6 until you know what 2 and 3 show?
I don't understand the question.
Okay, so if you're looking at, I want to bid on this RFP,
yes.
And basically you haven't looked what's out there yet, and then you find out what's out there, that steps 4 and 5 are going to be much bigger than you thought they were going to be, or much smaller than you thought they were going to be. How do you budget for that, since you don't know?
So I think that will be a question for the organization that will be bidding, because we're expecting to find people that have done this before, and if they've done it before, they know that these are the steps that they need to follow. I don't think that we're such a distinct and unique community that they did it somewhere else and they didn't find the same challenges.
I mean, in response to what Karen was saying, I think that the other organizations that have looked at this have looked at one part, and I think what this community engagement over health, community health assessment basically looks at everything, and that has not been done in a way that needs to be done before the district can use that. I share your concern at the beginning, though, that how do we make sure that we let those other organizations know we're not just duplicating what they did or trying to take over what they did. And I think that that's a very touchy political thing.
And it's not about taking over or doing something that anybody else has done.
I think stop them from thinking.
Even
HARC, I know, when HARC sees this, they're going to think, oh my God, they're going to bring somebody else to do what we do, and we're going to have to explain, no, it's not what you're doing. you know.
Mm-hmm. It's informing the district for its new reality. It's now a new district. Now it's a new community. Now it's.
But it's not like our communities have changed because the district was expanded.
No, the community
the
hasn't
Eastern
changed.
Eastern Coachella Valley hasn't gotten a hotel, hasn't gotten new car dealerships, we haven't gotten a university. There is no like economic booster in the last 4 or 5 years. There, that may have been the case in Palm Desert. That may be the case for sure in Palm Springs, but in the East Valley, right? Like our communities still look the same, right? The data that was there 5 years ago. It's gonna look very similar. The
but are we economy. Gonna, are we even gonna be looking at that data? I don't think.
I think we should. There's people who are still in relationship with people in the East Valley.
I know, but there's all these other organizations of economic development and all that are looking at all that stuff.
Who probably have newer data, but should have been working off of this too. Like Lift to Rise, I think has done some kind of assessment. They have their like mapping tool. I don't know what they have. I'm assuming, though, that they also paid a lot of money already to get someone to give them information. How did they land on those 3 cans or whatever they call them?
And
it must have been through data.
And again, that is wonderful that that data exists because it's going to help inform what's out there. But it's still, it doesn't provide the district with a priority. It doesn't tell the district, this is district-wide, what our priority should be. Are we embarking on supporting housing efforts? That I think that's a valid question for all the board members. Is that where we want to, our efforts to be focused? Or do we want to have our own data to say, okay, we believe that this is a holistic effort that requires narrowing down what is the district's priority to affect health, understanding that there are other efforts. And ultimately, I think that if we want to change the dynamics of the Coachella Valley, all these different efforts need to coalesce in one funders collaborative so that there is a cohesive effort to break down all the barriers that are preventing people from obtaining, in from our perspective, good health outcomes, which are prevented by all the other barriers that they're finding, which are the social determinants of health.
So I've heard this already from the endowment. The California endowment tried this in 14 different places across California. They dumped over $10 million in each one of these 14 places. Some of them were successful, but to be honest, none of them are at like that healthy space and time, right? Like none of them really were 100% successful with their big ass logic models and their very educated staff and everything else, right? That isn't the case in the Eastern Coachella Valley. They put in $10 million plus dollars in investments over the last 10 years, but we haven't gotten what you're saying we're gonna get with another one of these studies, another funding collaboration. No hemos llegado allí, we haven't gotten there yet.
But those weren't looking at, they were looking at finding what the needs were, but not necessarily filling the needs.
No, they were. They were funding.
Well, they were also like a place-based initiative because
correct.
It was set in Coachella and then they
yeah.
realized they had to include Thermal Mecca in that. So it was indicative of that very, very specific area.
And
they
like I'm saying, those areas haven't improved, right? Like there hasn't been this boom of economic or health success in the Eastern Coachella Valley, even though they had the studies, even though they had the funder collaboratives, even though they had very intelligent staff, all of these people coming in from UC Davis and UC at USC and other places, right? Like the Eastern Coachella Valley is better, right? We've seen a larger scope of people voting.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but has people's heart diseases gone down, right? No. Have the amount of people who die when they're working out in the heat gone down? No. What I would like to see, to be honest, the first step is like a collection of all the data that exists and where are the places where data doesn't exist. I can tell you, Indio, La Quinta, almost no data has been collected on them. Cathedral City, IHP has some, but who else has more? Maybe Borrego, but no one else, right? There's some places in our communities who who don't have anyone looking out for them, mm-hmm. who are going to be the places where we're not going to have data to be able to make these decisions because no one has been looking at them.
So I believe that any work that gets done will not be perfect. I think there will be limitations, and one of the steps that this contractor will have to take is understanding what are the gaps and what data can be utilized and collected to inform our efforts.
How long do you think it would take to collect the existing data? I mean, going through the solicitation process and the education process and the calming of anxiety process, how long do you think that would take?
If you have like a dedicated staff member who is doing this work, or a consultant or someone else, probably not more than a month. There isn't a ton of data that exists out there either, right? That's not, but it does exist.
So if you budgeted a month, you think you can capture what's practically there?
I think to move this forward, Conrado, I think it's worth trying to split it. And so that you can do the first part, knowing that the second part's gonna come, but at least alleviate the concerns that some people have about where the second part's going to go without knowing where the first part is. And I think you can certainly let whoever is going to apply for RFP that hopefully they'll be able to compete for the second part, but we don't know how big that breadbasket's going to be yet, because we don't know yet what's out there, so we want them to help us find out what's out there.
So we're here to serve at the will of the board.
I want you to get it through the board, and I'm hearing some resistance that I think could be overcome by being clear that nothing's going to happen in steps 4, 5, 6 and beyond until we're very clear about 1, 2, and 3. I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
That's reasonable.
So how do we, I will ask the staff this question, how do we go about splitting this step 1, 2 and
part of 3 probably?
Part of 3. Well, the community is defined. We have a district.
Right.
So the community is well defined. We have the 16 zip codes. So we have
the population. why is 3 after 2 and not 1, 3, 2?
I don't know, we'll have to call the Association of Community Health Improvement to...
Well, but I would add a step in that there is a collection. You're collecting information about studies that have already been done, mm-hmm. and step more four. Importantly, what they led to, if anything.
Step 4.
That's 4.
Collect and analyze data.
Analyzing the
data. But there we're not collecting de novo data. We're not going out and looking at the... what the percentage of people with health insurance are, or, you know, which, by the way, has already been done. We're not looking to see, at some point, somebody's going to have to say, there are X number of providers in the valley, and this is how they're distributed, and stuff like that, right?
But this is so getting to the end product of a community health needs assessment is like making sausage. there is no, you know, we try to organize these things in steps. There is no logical order in doing step 1, step 2, step 3. I believe that whoever is going to be doing this will be doing steps 1 through 7 at any given time, because you need to have information about different things all at the same time. So splitting it will only delay this process and make it more complicated and cumbersome than what it probably is already. So that's my argument against delaying it. And then if we add the fact that each step through the vetting processes of an elected board requires, now we bring this request for proposal opportunity before you. It gets delayed, okay, we'll take it back. We will come back next month. So let's say that it gets approved, then we will have a request for proposals out. Again, that comes with all the different processes of somebody submits a request for proposals, we evaluate it, we approve it, we bring it back to the board. We will have an organization here probably in February or March of next year. By the time that they complete this process, present their information to the board, we're talking about April, May, June, and then the board decides, okay, now we're ready to have an organization to do steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. We will then have, again, start the process de novo. We bring the RFP to your consideration, you approve it, we post it, this organization comes. We will be here next year around this time.
So can they ask you and your staff to do 1, 2, and 3?
I don't think so, because it will be extremely political. And we're trying to move away from the political components of doing this. Because
why do you think it'll be political?
Because the Harks of the world, the Live to Rise of the world, will try to influence what we are doing.
It's that 1, 2, and 3, we just want to collect data.
And they will say, and they will say,
IHP's community assessment looks like.
They will say that somebody's data is going to be more relevant, it was better collected, oh no, that's not relevant to the community. Believe me, it's going to be. It already is, and we haven't had a request for proposals. I know that those organizations are already approaching board members to try to influence this process. Imagine when the staff comes back with recommendations or that.
I want to support you as the new CEO and what you think is best, and I'm willing to do it. My concern is that you've got to get 3 other board members to do that, and my only suggestion was to try to look for a way to do that. Now maybe you can easily get 3 other board members to do it. I don't know. You have to first convince these two to basically say trust you, and I do, and I, you know, I'm willing to do that, but you're going to need to answer the concerns of other people.
See, if you go to page 18 in the packet, it really breaks out what each one of these steps really means. And that might be a little bit more helpful understanding.
Page what?
Page 18.
18?
Mm-hmm. Of your packet. Not the previous packet.
Community, the one that says primary care and behavioral health and stop.
It's got this wheel.
It's 13 and 14
that kind of break out exactly what each of these steps mean and how it is all cohesive that you do them all together. Because where they talk about it, you know, it's an ongoing process.
So maybe you need to be more explicit in steps 1 and 2 that we realize that work has already been done in this area and we're not going to recreate it. We want to find out what's been done before. And granted that it may not be what we're looking for. What do you think, Karen?
I think it's a lot of money to put out there for something that other people have already spent a lot of money on.
You're talking about $300,000.
Yes. That's the first sort of thing that comes up, right? It's just a lot of money. I don't think that you, in the month that you've been here, have spoken. I don't know who you've spoken to, but more specifically on this, people like IHP who do an assessment, I think it's every year or every 3 years, right? They're like constantly looking at our regions. Molina Health is another big health player.
By the way, every nonprofit health insurance has to do a community needs assessment because of their community benefit.
So do we have, like, I
They don't necessarily make it public, by the way.
Right, but we are a big player in the area, right? Like, we one need to develop those relationships. So that's my second piece, right? I think that there's research out there already to help us move forward. And then my last thing is that if we go a couple of months beyond the current strategic plan, it's not the end of the world. I do hear, like, the budget, though, that is important, making sure that by May we do have some priorities for our budget. But I think that's what some of this research, this initial research, can help us with, right? Looked at 8 different reports of different assessments across the Coachella Valley and Inland Empire region. These were, like, the top 5 issues that come up regarding health in the Coachella Valley. Here you go, board. Have at it, right? I think we've waited some time on other things as well, like the hiring of the board or the hiring of the CEO. There's been a couple of other things that we've, like, prolonged, not too far out, and we've been okay. So those are my 3 points.
Yes, to comment on some of your points, Karen. I am reaching out to all those organizations. It takes time before the CEO of IEHP becomes available to meet with me. But yes, I have reached out to him, I reached out to First Five, I have reached out to Kaiser Permanente, I am reaching out to Public Health and Riverside County. So all those entities that I believe we need to have not only a conversation, we need to have the buy-in of what this process is, we're reaching out to them. It will effectively delay the process of engaging with an organization that will be effectively doing the same, because step one of meeting with people and identifying what's been done, what are the landmines, and what are the opportunities to do this work, is something that I'm already embarking in doing, and they will have to repeat that process through the guidance of my work and the work of the board. But we can wait until that process is completed, and then we can bring it back.
I also think those relationships are important, because at some point we will be asking them for money. The IH, or at least we should be. The IHPs of the world have a lot of money, right? Kaisers of the world have a lot of money. They also have a lot at stake in the Coachella Valley. They may not have a hospital the way Tenet does, right? But they have many other health services and people who hold their insurance.
Mm-hmm.
They have big stakes here.
Yeah.
I don't think we should oversee them and their work and the investments they've already made.
But I do think that these organizations want to know that the district is looking at things strategically as to how it wants to spend its money, and that that process needs to start somewhere.
And so my ask is just that it starts with them and their research and some of the things people have already done.
I think that's what we're being told is going to happen in the first couple steps. What I hear your and other people's concern is that they're going to look at the steps later on and somehow feel that they'll be excluded. So I think that you need to make very clear at the very beginning that you know we're not trying to take their work or jobs or whatever influence. And obviously, since it's touched some raw nerves, even among board members, we need to do a better job. I don't particularly know how to suggest doing that, but what do you think?
First of all, the audit, the deadline is an artificial deadline. I mean, plus or minus 2 or 3 months is not going to change the world. So arguments that say we have to hit a certain deadline, unless it's a hard number, shouldn't really be given that much priority. if there's a way to, and I don't have enough experience with RFPs of this nature to answer the question, but if you can write the RFP in a way that you fund part A, let's say 1 through 3, and then you don't fund part B until the presentation of A is made. I don't know if that's mechanically possible, or do you have to issue an absolutely new RFP, or can the contractor who won part A automatically know that he's going to get part B, and then have it refined?
So we did phase one and phase two for seismic.
Mm-hmm. Oh no! So what is that? So let's assume you have an RFP not to exceed $300,000, and you say to the contractor, bid specifically on 1 through 3. And when 1 through 3 is done, and we know how many organizations or how the scope of do, then we expect the refinement in part B. Is that valid?
Then you can award phase two.
Yeah, we can condition the steps because they have to complete and they have to meet with us every time they do the work.
Right,
they have to provide a report to us.
But if they don't submit a money bid on part B until we approve part A, that can be done?
Yeah.
Then all we're engaged in is semantics.
They would present it here.
Discussion is moot. It's moot. It allows you to issue the RFP recognizing stages 1 through 9 with the condition that there's going to be a stop after 3, a report from 3, and then that will condition your money request for part B. And if we don't like it, you're out. If we do like it, you can keep going.
Exactly.
But we're saying we're getting the RFP dollar.
The gross, you're getting the estimated gross.
All that in.
Yeah.
And you're just triggering it.
Conditional, but part B is, the authorization of dollars for part B is conditional upon A, subject to change.
Correct. Yes.
Then this discussion's moot. We're not apart. We're saying the same thing.
Some of step 4 is going to be included in phase 1.
Yes.
I think
that makes sense.
What?
Your point makes sense.
Yeah, then we're okay. We're saying the same thing, just adding a stop, adding a.
It's all about redoing it and bringing it back with the goal of it being on the October here and on the October board. I think Arthur raises a good point. Yes, it would be nice to know our priorities before we do budgeting for next year, but, the priorities aren't going to change that much from this year to next year. They will change, but I think if it carried over, there's still a chunk. We still will allocate $3.5 million for grants, and
the makeup of that can be done.
It's conditional, subject to Part B.
I think you can write it so that it answers the concerns of the
Express.
Absolutely. I think that's
all you have to do is add a stop, an evaluation.
Phase 1 and phase 2, like we did with seismic. Yeah.
Okay.
Did that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
So when will this be? What happens next?
So we will bring back.
Staff to go back.
Yeah, the request for proposals at the next month meeting of this committee, with the understanding that we will be presenting this to the full board in the October
Do we need to get?
Do we have a request today? Is there something? If we didn't have this discussion, is there an RFP request today?
There is an RFP request.
What?
But we're basically saying.
Where is it? Is my question. What document reflects the RFP?
The RFP.
It's in the first couple pages.
Starts page 3.
Yeah, so if you go at the very.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Thank you. All right, so you just have to modify this.
Yes.
Okay.
Essentially, that's what we will do. Okay. We will modify this document.
Do I need to make a report at the board meeting tomorrow that we sent it back for modification, or is it not on the agenda?
I don't think it needs to be.
It's not on the agenda anyway.
So there's a strategic plan line item, but there's nothing underneath that. So that's.
You can communicate it if you want.
Okay.
But it's.
Okay.
Can you communicate it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
So here's step three of our presentation.
Through step three.
Gap funding. At the one of the previous allocations that we have in our budget, this is something that has already been approved, was a $300,000 allocation for the East Valley, of which about $75,000 has been spent. Therefore, we have 2 years worth of funding that have not been utilized. That results in $525,000 that we have booked for the East Valley that has not been disbursed. So, do you want those? So our idea is to have a request for proposals for organizations in the East Valley, and there will be a number of criteria to ensure that the monies go to the East Valley, to have organizations address some of the priorities that they stated through the process of the listening forums that we had in the East Valley. So we want to prioritize access to care, understanding that access means availability, accessibility, acceptability, and affordability of healthcare in the East Valley. So I don't know if we need approval for releasing that request for proposal from this committee, or because the money has already been approved and allocated for the East Valley, it's something that the staff can release.
I have a question. What kind of organization do you anticipate responding to this?
That is a very good question. If you go to your last page, the second to last page of your packet.
Okay. Thank you.
We listed out in this preface that it's not inclusive. There might be some that we missed. We would probably know the best ones we missed. But it lists the
we have a list of nonprofits there. Some
that these
reside.
Are the people that might respond to the RFP?
Yes.
So wait, sorry, which packet are you looking at?
The online.
The online
page 21?
Yes, and page 22.
Page 21 and 22.
People are or are not going through our grant.
No, I'm not asking the question.
The same way anyone else would apply for a budget.
Hold on.
No, I'm not.
He's not finished, Karen. For example, the Galilee Center is totally focused in the East. They have not applied for any of our.
Yes, they
have. That's not my question. That's not my question.
What's the question?
I'm talking about the organization that's going to produce the report that they're going to get paid for, not the object, not the organizations they're going to survey.
Oh, you're talking about two different RFPs.
Yeah, this is a new RFP.
He's talking about the gap funding.
You're asking for an RFP for the gap funding that's different than the other RFP.
Yes.
Okay. So RFP number two.
Yes.
What kinds of firms will respond to do the work for RFP number two, not the objects of what they're
It's not one RFP. It's basically we're saying to the organizations in the East Valley, you can now apply for funding because you weren't able to do it before.
Okay, so it's not like RFP number one where we're getting a report. These are solicitations of agencies to request funding from us.
Yes.
Thank you. I did not appreciate the difference.
Well, we can't call the solicitation either because of AB 2019.
Okay.
Well, the word RFP threw me off.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I thought we were looking for a company that was going to produce a report.
No.
This is just an invitation to potential grantees.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
I personally think, and I'm speaking again out loud here, is that staff, because this has already been allocated by the board, focused on the East Valley, that although you should inform the program committee that you're doing it because these requests will go to the program committee, that you don't really need anybody to approve whatever the letter is you send out saying it's available, would you?
I don't think so. People are going to go through the same process as people on the west side of the valley.
They have, yes. Start with the letter of intent. Yes. But this RFP would actually, they'll have parameters.
We're
kind of looking at for basic core operating support, which has never actually, I mean, we, in the past, you know, different organizations we've been core operating support to, but we never really pulled it out and said specific to core operating support.
Because there is such a need out there and the organizations out there tend not to be the big DAPs and all that, we're not going to have required them to go through the same rigorous financial and board kind of stuff. Well, then what are you saying that, what were you just saying?
We still have to make sure the financial is strong.
Okay, but you were saying it's going to be different.
Well, it's not going to just be like a willy-nilly grant proposal. I mean, it's not all of a sudden like an LOI is going to come in.
You guys are explaining everything. What you guys explained, I think, was that they mentioned, I know during one of our staff meetings or during one of our meetings, that an agency would actually come in with this RFP to work with the staff to determine which agencies, please correct me if I'm wrong, that haven't already received funding in the East Valley would receive that funding. Am I correct? Through this RFP process.
Okay, I didn't follow that at all.
So agencies that we have not funded in the East.
You're going to send a letter out to these agencies saying we're now going to have funding, you can apply for grants, right?
Yeah,
it'll have some parameters.
But there will be, because we look at this list and we don't have money for everybody.
Right.
So we have to limit the funding up to a maximum of, I don't know, something reasonable. We thought 50,000, which will give us 10 grants for potentially 38 organizations. So it has to be a competitive process. Therefore, we have to have criteria to prioritize who will get this funding.
So I think the content of the letter, the criteria that you're coming forward should be approved, I think, by the program committee. Because they're the ones, basically, that are gonna look at these and they're gonna say, well, why did
this one apply?
Yeah, this one and that one apply. So
yeah.
I think they need to somehow look at it before the letter goes out and be comfortable with that. I hope it doesn't get into a big debate, but it's not necessarily this committee.
Okay.
But yeah.
We'll put it at the next program committee.
My suggestion would be is that you draft it now and sit down with Carol, the chair, and say, this is what we're thinking, what do you think? And because the next meeting is, what, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now? So, and make sure that Carol has her input, and therefore when you present it at the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, there's nothing wrong with you talking to the other committee members to make sure, especially the new ones that haven't been on the program committee before, that, you know, this is what we're trying to do. Some of it is because it's new and we don't really, you know, we're doing things new and it just has to explain, I think. That makes sense? That would be okay.
So I want to ask you a question about direction. Last year there was a new law that was enacted in the state of California, it's AB 2019, which makes grant making for districts a little different than how grant making was done in the past. The new law created provisions to enhance the transparency of how healthcare districts are granting or utilizing their funds to support their work in their communities. And I believe that one of the mechanisms that we have to ensure transparency is the request for proposals mechanism. Is this mechanism the right way that you want the staff to be working on? Is this a framework that you want the staff to utilize when we are releasing funds to the public?
Well, let's step back a minute. I think the reason that law was done is that it appeared that the same people were getting grants over and over again because they knew it was available. And there wasn't a lot of outreach to other organizations so that they knew that these funds were available. And then there was a concern, not here, mm-hmm. in this district, but in other districts, that basically behind the scenes contact was going on so that certain people, certain organizations were getting grants. I think that whether you call it a request for a proposal or just an announcement saying, you know, these are the areas that we have so much money, X number of dollars to give, we want to focus it in these areas. If your organization feels that it has a worthy project that improves the health, you know, our mission, blah, 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 this is how you apply for a grant. Making sure people know about that, I think, is the purpose. Whether you do that as an RFP or an ad in the newspaper or sending a letter to all these organizations, personally, I think directly contacting these organizations that you think might be interested and letting them know what we can do and what we can't do and that we're here to help them is the way to go. Unfortunately, the word RFP has a lot of different connotations to different people. So I think maybe you need to get rid of the word RFP.
That's the point that I was trying to get at. So maybe to release it as a funding announcement rather than request for
proposal announcement.
Yeah, however, and once again, we're not the only healthcare district that's dealing with this, so a good thing to do, and if you're going to the meeting in a couple of weeks, you can talk to the other CEOs and say, how are you complying with this law? And what are you doing to outreach and let people know? We only know what we know here because we've done it, and I'm sure that we can find out what other people have done, too. But I agree, and I think we just had a good example of it, though.
Right.
The word RFP means different things to different people, especially because it's so legalese about it. So,
when you send out the letter, will it be online? There's a lot of nonprofits that are not on your list. There's a lot that I don't know and other people don't know. But if it's like visible publicly somewhere, those people will have access to them. Even if it's like an announcement on our webpage or something.
We would make that.
We would
make it.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to do that.
Okay. Just that was the only question.
Yes. And we will do. We can do that, and we can also do a blast email to the nonprofit community.
And I think, for example, if we know that the county behavioral health group is working on certain things, and they may know of behavioral health organizations in the East Valley that we don't know about yet, then we make sure they know to let their clients know and their resources know about it.
If there's some organizations that we missed, would you mind going to the list?
It might take me a bit of time, super small, but yes.
Yeah.
When do you plan on sending it out?
When?
Soon or?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
So that's another question. So do we have, I guess we have to bring it to the program committee.
I would bring it to the program committee with the list.
With the criteria.
They may know people on the program committee may know of other ones, and I think then it'll be reported at the board, and the board may have additional names to add to it.
And it will be an open process, so they can
they can
submit their letter of intent to us.
Okay. Is there any old business? Any other new business? The next meeting is what day? Do we have a date?
October 8th. It's normally quarterly.
Okay, I am not here October 8th.
Right.
So are we moving that meeting or do you? I'm happy
quarterly
would
mean.
Oh, it's quarterly.
October
11th.
But you direct the staff to bring it back.
I think we need a sooner meeting.
You need an October meeting.
It'll have to be.
So the week of the 21st.
Yeah.
Week of the 21st of October.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I can't do the 23rd. I can do the rest of the week.
Well, Karen, your schedule is the most.
Do you want it prior to putting the packet together for the board meeting?
Well,
the problem is Les is out of town.
Oh,
yeah, I'm out of town until basically the 16th of October. Unless you want to do it on the 16th or 17th.
The 18th?
Friday the 18th, I could.
That works. I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm okay all day Friday the 18th.
It's a Friday.
It's a Friday the 18th.
And that's when the packet goes out.
Oh, we have our
we have our lease.
Our lease meeting on Tuesday, so we could put it maybe after the lease meeting.
Thursday
the 17th.
We'd have to do it before because I have a we could do it from 11 to 12
on
Thursday the 17th.
Yes.
Oh, after the hospital lease committee meeting
on the 17th. What?
Yes.
That's following the hospital lease.
Yes.
Committee. Can we do that?
What
can we make it 11:30? Just gives me a little time to prepare for the next
nothing
one.
That you're
nothing involved.
I'm
okay.
Here for a hospital board meeting.
Okay.
Can we make it 11:30?
Until 11:30.
So start at 11:30.
Well, I have to be up there downstairs. And,
So 11 to 12.
I mean, the hospital lease thing is not going to go past 10:30.
Okay.
In fact, you could probably say 10:30.
Well, 11:30. Actually, Kevin Porter's coming from the hospital.
Association?
Yes.
Okay, so make it 11 to 12.
11 to 12?
Yeah.
And if we get finished earlier, then we can.
Right, or.
Start it.
I mean, Karen,
11 yeah. to 12 on the 17th.
Yeah, we
have Strategic Planning that. Committee.
I will. I can't get the internet to access on here.
Okay. Anything else? If not, I'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you very much.